good afternoon after Christmas and between New Year's and that middle time of the year when nobody really knows what day it is or what time it is or what we're supposed to be doing. But it is hashtag No Limits time. I am your host, Shelley Kino. And hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will believe, who we will be. And I believe that 100% and believe that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms itself as a butterfly. Then, as if that wasn't difficult enough, it has to fight its way out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. While that is not easy, neither is busting through those limits that society has placed upon a person. And I am so excited today to bring my friend Meredith on to share with you about the limits that she herself has busted through, as well as the limits that she is now helping other people bust through. So Meredith, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with everybody today.
Yeah. So I just want to give a little background. Meredith is also a master IEP coach, and she and I got to meet in person, yay, last July. And hopefully we'll get to do that again at our master IEP VIP weekend. If you are not a master IEP coach and you would like more information about that, reach out to one or both of us. It's a wonderful organization of people to be involved with. And I can't tell you how awesome it is. This last year was my third year, and every time meeting new people, it just feels like everybody's still on the same page. I haven't met a person yet who seems like, oh, that's not, what are you doing here?
Right. It's like an instant bond and friendship just to be able to talk and meet so many people who have the same beliefs and vision that you do for special education, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are also a teacher. So yes. That's another thing that we have in common. Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit more about yourself. And for those, I always forget this kind of businessy side of things. Make sure that you like this. You subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up. Share it with your friends, because what we share here is valuable to so many people. But Facebook and all the other little algorithms don't always show it unless it's shared a lot or commented on. So please be sure to let us know that you're watching, whether hashtag live or hashtag replay. And I'm sorry, Meredith, now go ahead and tell us more about yourself.
Well, yes. So my name is Meredith Mitchell. I am a special education teacher. However, I didn't start as a special education teacher. I started as a regular general education teacher, and then became a special education teacher as I got more students in my classroom that I saw that were struggling and wanted to know more and how to help them in the classroom with their struggles. And so I went back and got my master's in special education. And so I've been doing that ever since. So I'm going into my 20th year teaching in the general education classroom and or in the resource room type settings and things. So yeah, that's a little bit about me. I'm married. I have three children. I have a daughter who's 8, and then I have boy-girl twins that are 5. And so I'm definitely busy behind the scenes as well, being a mom and helping my own children at home who, you know, need me to, and help them at their school and things like that. So makes it a little bit easier with all the background that I do have in education and special education. So that's just a little bit about me, but I am a master IEP coach as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what area do you sort of specialize in? Catherine always tells us, Catherine is our mentor, and she always tells us that we should have kind of a niche area. I still don't know that I've come down to mine yet. No, I've been doing this for like 4 years now, but do you have one area where you are just really, really passionate more so than other areas?
I do work with teachers, and I love to mentor and coach them, because my philosophy is, if you can work with one teacher, they have the ability to change, 20 children's lives. Where I do work one-on-one with families as well. I do enjoy that. But you're helping one family with one or two, or maybe three kids that have some issues or need IEP help. But when you're helping a teacher, you get to help them. And then once you've shown them ways and different methods to make school easier or writing IEPs better, then they're going to go out there and change 20 kids' lives. And so that's just kind of where I see my niche to be, is to help in those areas, help teachers learn how to write better IEPs, more efficient, use better strategies, make sure that the IEPs are individualized for the help that the student needs, not just these cookie cutter IEPs that we see so many times. So that's just kind of where I feel like my passion is just helping teachers. Because I felt like when I graduated from college with my degree in special education, no one taught me how to write an IEP. They just threw me out there and was like, here you go. And the very first IEP I wrote, I actually only had 3 days to write it. And so it was just like, wow, you know, and so that's kind of, I don't ever want anybody to feel like that. So I try to just come in and step in and help mentor teachers along the way.
And I'm glad you brought that up. And if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about that a little bit more. Just the fact that I think a lot of parents, and I'll be honest, I have the same misconception, because when I went through school, I did my undergrad in both elementary and special education. And I did have a course specifically designed for writing the IEP, as well as learning the special education laws that goes into all of that stuff. And so I thought every student learning under getting their special education degree would have a course like that. But there are so many stories like yours that I'm hearing all the time. And so since you had your undergrad degree and then you went back for the master's in special ed, what sort of courses did you take for the master's level that helped you prepare, or that were supposed to help you prepare to be a special education teacher?
Well, they did. The university that I went to is fantastic and they do a great job. But it was more so learning about different types of disabilities and different areas and how you can help students with those. I did take a master level class in reading and the structure of how to teach someone how to read. And so that was very helpful, where I didn't get that in my undergrad, which you probably should have. And so those were helpful classes to take too. And then like specially designed instruction, or even like adapted PE courses, things like that. So you can help children with no matter what type of disabilities. That had a class on behavior, things like that. And so, but the only IEP I ever had to write was just one in one class, and it was a group project. And so I went back to my special education teachers that I worked with at the school that I was at and was like, help me. And I had seen, you know, lots of IEPs because I was a gen ed teacher and I had a lot of children. I was almost like the inclusion classroom that those students came into. And I had a full-time aide that was with me all day and a SPED teacher that co-taught with me. And so I knew a lot about IEPs already, and a little bit, not near as what I needed to know. So I did take some good classes and it did help in those areas, but not enough, just not enough.
Right. And when I think about how many courses a person takes to get an undergrad degree. My daughter just finished her college degree a few weeks ago. And so I've been watching her for the last 3.5, 4 years. And then I think about, you know, even yourself, you had an undergrad in education and then you did a master's. So that was another probably what, 15-ish type, something 15, 16 courses. And it still really doesn't, because it just can't, I feel. It really prepare you for every student that's going to walk in your door, every scenario that you're going to face. And so we often assume that teachers have it all. They know it all. They are, you know, yeah, they're the experts, but we are fine. At least I'm discovering, and I'm hoping that as parents are watching this, that they are also hearing that we're not, and teachers across the country do not know your child. And I think the law did a fabulous job knowing that ahead of time, because they've said the parent is an equal member of the team, because the parent is truly the expert on that individual child. And yes, we've learned as educators different methods for teaching, different methods for approaching a situation, but we can't know everything.
Right. Right. And that's the one thing, the one constant person on the IEP team is the parent always. Case managers are going to change. General education teachers are going to change. The parent's not going to change. And that's what's so important about being a parent, and just, you know, surrounding yourself and immersing yourself in the knowledge of what your child needs is so beneficial. And special education teachers, we welcome it. I welcome it. I love it when parents come in and ask questions or want to be more involved and ask, like, where can I get more support on this? Or do you have any, you know, suggestions on what I can do? And I love that. I love it when parents come in and say, hey, this is what you need to know about my child. And I'm like, please tell me everything. You know, it's just one of those things, because as a teacher, I hope people are still open to professional development and learning. I had students where I was at that were hearing impaired. I didn't know sign language. I didn't know anything. I knew a little bit just on what you do pick up here and there. So I went to the Alabama Institute for the Deaf and Blind, and I took classes. And because I wanted to be able to communicate with those students that I had in my classroom and their parents, because two of the children, one of them parents were deaf, and I wanted to be able to communicate with them. And so I feel like as a teacher, you have to be open to do those kind of things too.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And I understand, you know, I've been out of teaching for a few years, full-time teaching. I still sub, and I can't imagine, you know, I know how busy I was prior to COVID pandemic, right, teaching and schooling. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the pressure and the time restraints that are on, or maybe it's not a restraint, maybe it's the time necessary to get everything done now. And so to do another thing is sometimes just that thing just doesn't get done by teachers. And it isn't because they don't want to, I mean, there might be those cases, but I would say the majority of it, it's not because they don't want to. They just don't have the energy or the time. And so, again, you know, as parents, please be gentle from one year to the next with the new teachers, with the new caseworkers, with the new therapists, because they don't know your child. It's not because they don't care. It's they just haven't had the time, or you're you know, first time meeting them, so they haven't had the opportunity to get to know you or your family. And so if we can be gentle on both sides, and both sides, and I hate to say sides, but all sides of all areas of the table, you know, every seat at the table, if we can all remember that, and I think then we can really start to have better, more collaborative, less stress types of IEP meetings, and then really get a good IEP written so that it can be followed, so that the child can become the best version of themselves as possible.
Definitely. I agree with that.
So Meredith, I learned a few months ago that you had some limits placed upon you growing up. What were those, and how did you bust through those?
I did. So when I was in third grade, I was diagnosed with dyslexia. It's a different type of dyslexia. It's actually called cross dominance. So I struggled a little bit in kindergarten. And then first grade, it's just the reading and the spelling just did not come naturally to me. I do have an identical twin sister. And so there was some comparison going on, like, well, she's doing this, why isn't she doing that? You know, those kind of things. Not that my parents would compare, because, you know, you're not supposed to compare. But when you have children in the same home, you say, you do realize, okay, well, this one's picking up on these things. This one should be too at this rate. Right. So I definitely was struggling in school. And so my parents decided to take me in and let me and have testing done to see what was going on, because I wasn't making the grades that I should and wasn't able to read until really the end of second grade. And that's when my teacher was, you know, talked to them about it. My mom is also an educator, and so she was aware, and she also has dyslexia. So it does run in the family. It does run in a lot of families if people did not know that, but it definitely does. Her father actually has it too. Pretty sure my son has it now. And so it's just one of those things that we found out, they found out. And since then, they were looking into the school system to see if I could get an IEP or get some more additional help. Now, this was, you know, 25 years ago, long time ago, before all the really good things were put into place. And so, of course, they told her that I'd have to fail in order to qualify for services. And that was just not something that my mom was going to let happen. And right. So that was one of those things. And too, you know, a lot of parents hear that, like, your child has a learning disability, but they don't qualify for special education. And then that's the biggest question you've got is, well, what am I supposed to do? Well, you know, as parents, like my mom, she did, she took it into her own hands. I had a tutor. She worked with me tirelessly after school, you know, with flashcards, with audio. And this was before all the great technology. I can remember her used to recording stories for me to listen to on a tape player, because that's the best way I learned, was just listening to things, highlighting things. And that really helped me learn as I went. And I did do well. I was actually in public school until fifth grade. And then my parents decided to pull us out. And that's one thing, parents, you know, there is no right path for one child. You know, sometimes children, parents think, okay, well, we've got to put them in school. Well, you can put them in public school. You can put them in private school. You can homeschool them. Now we have virtual school, where, I mean, we didn't have that back then. So there's lots of different areas that you can use to help at home. And so my mom just decided to pull us out and homeschool us for a little while. And so we were homeschooled for 3 years, kind of those middle school years that are so hard for everyone. But I was able to stay home and get the help that I needed. And then by the time I was in ninth grade, they actually put us back into school, into private school, and ended up doing, you know, well. Now, I still had to learn all of the strategies. I still had to use those methods that were very helpful to me. And I was able to be successful. I graduated, you know. Was it hard? Yeah, it was real hard. It was real hard to see my sister, you know, after school, go off and do what she wanted to. And then I was sitting there at home with the flashcards and the highlighters and studying and listening to myself read all of the text over again. And that was one of those things that was just, it's just a part of life. You know, when you do have dyslexia, it, till this day, it still troubles me when I'm writing and I'm spelling. I don't spell all the words backwards. And that's one thing I think is a misconception a lot of people have about dyslexia, is that people write backwards and they write numbers backwards. And that's not necessarily true. That's not really what it is. It's a processing problem that you have, right? So it's just the neurological pathways in your brain are less developed. And so it makes things slower and less efficient. Doesn't mean we're not intelligent. We're very, people right. with dyslexia are Absolutely. Very intelligent. But it's just, everything's a little bit slower. It's like you have to go over the fence and get the piece of information and then bring it back and jump over the fence and put it back to where it needs to go. And so I was, you know, able to do that, graduated from high school just fine, and went on obviously to college and did well in college, and then went and got my master's. So dyslexia was something that definitely challenged me. It still does to this day. I have to be real careful when I'm writing and typing. And now with all the technology, it's great because there's spell checks everywhere. You know, long ago, it wasn't there. And you had to go back and reread your work and redo your work. But it made me stronger. It made me more sympathetic, too. And now that I'm able to work with children who have disabilities and help them and tell them, I know exactly how you feel. I know what it feels right. like when you're trying to read and you don't know what that word is, and you're like flushed and your hands are sweating and you're like, oh my goodness. And you're trying to sound it out and it's just not coming easy like it is for, you know, your peers. So it's made me definitely a better teacher for sure.
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree, believe that. I had my own struggles. I didn't have any sort of reading diagnosis or math diagnosis, but I had anxiety, except we didn't know, you know, because I'm older than you. So I, you know, it was like 100 years ago when I was in school, and anxiety wasn't a name given to anything. It was, you know, oh, she just doesn't want to be in school, because, you know, it was, it kind of happened on like Sunday nights, I would start to feel sick. So I missed a lot of Mondays, and it was, oh, she just wants an extended weekend. And my mom kept taking me to doctor after doctor, and, you know, just everything was always coming back. Oh, no, everything's fine. It's just all in her head. She's just making this up. And I think that's probably why I delve into behaviors. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy figuring out the why behind the behavior, because that was my experience, you know. And so yours is the helping people understand the learning disability, because you've been there. And I think that's some of what probably every master IEP coach goes through. It's either themselves or their children that they've seen, and they want to help other people feel like they're not alone and right. help them get through those kinds of issues and get over those hurdles and types of things. And so do you mind sharing a little bit about how it affected you socially to, like you said, I mean, you saw your sister going out and having fun after school. and you would have to stay and do all of that extra work. And I so appreciate what you said, before I forget to say this, about the fact that because you have a learning disability, that doesn't mean anything about your intelligence level.
Right.
You know, that was one of the things that I used to tell all of my students that had any eligibility to be with me, but specifically the learning disability. I would say, you know, it's not that you can't, it's that, you know, a lot of kids can just go from point A to point B or point A to point D, and it's straight through B and C. It's a perfect, easy path. You're going to go from A, and you're going to have to do this a few times, and you might have to go backwards, but you're still going to get to D also. It's just going to look different, and it might take a little bit more time. And it doesn't affect how smart or not smart you are.
Right. No, it doesn't. And I mean, I feel like I have a unique situation because I was compared a lot to my sister, not by my parents, but by my peers or by teachers. And that was something that was definitely difficult when I was younger, you know, because they would be like, well, she understands, she gets it, she's over there doing this. What, you're just playing, you're just messing around, you know, and it's things like that, like, you know, where you get invited, like, to read something in front of the class. Well, I would never raise my hand because I did not want to read in front of everyone. It did take my second grade teacher came and told my third grade teacher the things like, if you give it to her to practice, and then if she, you call on her, she will know the answer, or she will be able to read it, right? Give her a chance, tell her this is the sentence you want her to read, and then let her practice it. And then when you call on her, she'll be able to do it. So it's simple strategies like that that can really help a child and boost their self-esteem. It just takes that teacher getting to know that student and getting to figure out what's the best method. And sometimes if a teacher doesn't tell another teacher that, then they won't know. Or if a parent can just share that information with a teacher, the special education teacher or the general education teacher. You know, she really struggles with reading, but she does want to participate. She's not bored, or she's not being disrespectful because she doesn't want to answer your questions. It's because she struggles, you know, with reading and with spelling, you know, and that's something still to this day that I do struggle with. And I'm the first one to say it, you know, when I get ready to do anything or writing something up on a board, you know, we all have these professional developments where they're like, who wants to get up here and write on the board? I will not volunteer unless I have like my phone by me and I can just be like, I promise I am not texting. I am looking up how to spell this word, you know, to make sure I spell it correctly. And I feel like now it's not, we are more accepting now of all of that and on so many areas. So it makes it a little bit easier for us as adults, but it did definitely, you know, have issues with that growing up and just socially, just, you know, being embarrassed, you know, or having, you know, your friends taking the honors classes and doing things like that in high school. And you weren't, I wasn't, I just took the regular, you know, path. And you know what? That's okay. Cause I'm going to tell you, nobody would know that. Nobody's going to ask me if I took honors classes in high school, because right. It doesn't matter. It does matter. It does matter for all of you who are taking master's classes in high school. And I hope that you do, and you're successful and you do well, but that's your path. That, you know, you're going to probably go into a different profession and you need those classes for that. I knew I wanted to be a teacher or something like that in that area. And so it was okay for me to not take honors classes in high school. And I did fine in college, you know, doing the path that I chose. So, but yeah, it did make it difficult for sure. But I will say my twin sister she was very helpful. You know, she's really sweet. She studied with me. She practiced things with me too. And so she was very helpful along the journey that I had.
That's wonderful. And yeah, it's ironic that you talk about, you know, that nobody knows today,
right,
what grades you got in grade school and high school, because literally minutes before we came on air, I released my latest blog, and it's the third in a series that I entitled Making the Grade: How Does a Grade Become a Grade? And I talked about all the outside things that happen in order to make a grade, as far as like home life and attention and executive functioning skills and curriculum materials and things that are available. And it, like I said, it's a 3-part series, but the last thing in the third one that I just posted, I said, we put so much worth into somebody's grades, into a child's grades.
Child.
But we don't do that to adults. When you meet someone as an adult, you don't ask them for their report card. You have no idea what their grades were like, because you base your opinion on them of how your interactions are with them now. Mm-hmm. And yet we just put so much pressure, and kids do it to themselves too. Mm-hmm. You know, I tried really hard to not put that kind of pressure on my daughter, but she put it on herself because all of her friends were getting, you know, they were taking those kind of classes and they were getting the A's and the B's. And she was like, well, I know I can. So right. I'm going to do that. I should do that. But again, that was her path. You know, she had, there's so many different skills that we're all talented in. We're not all talented in the same skills. So we all have talents. I said that kind of wrong, but you know, each one of us has specials about us. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, that is school, and they do really well at that. That's fabulous. But for those who struggle or don't do as well, that doesn't change their value, in my opinion, mm-hmm. as to who they are. And again, I, you know, because of my experiences as a child and my experiences as a special ed teacher, I have the privilege to come to that conclusion.
Right.
Because of what I've seen and done. Not everybody has those same experiences. And so they do have different perceptions of that sort of thing.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So, you went to college, you got a master's degree. You're a successful business person. You have your master IEP coach business. You are a successful teacher. So what other limits that you can think of have you busted through?
Other limits. I don't know. I just feel like you always, you set these goals or these expectations, especially like in your career. I feel like as a special education teacher, you just kind of get not in a rut, but it's like, you know, you want to do more, you want to challenge yourself. I'm always looking for professional development to grow and have that growth mindset and change and adapt to your surroundings and things like that. And I feel like sometimes you can get sucked into just being okay the way you are and the way everything's going. I have a great job. I teach at a good school. The parents like me. I like my kids and caseload. But sometimes I feel like you just got to break out and do something different and challenge yourself again. And I did recently do that. Where I was at, I was in a fantastic school district. I was in a really good school. But I really wanted to just change and see if I could continue to help other people maybe in a different way and in a different place. And so I was actually given that opportunity this year. I changed school systems. I changed the grade I taught. I've changed everything, even a little bit of what I do behind the scenes as a special education teacher, just to continue to learn and grow. I have lab students and interns that come in now and work with me from universities and things like that. So I feel like you can always get to where you want to be, but you just kind of keep challenging yourself and don't let those limits stop you, because there's more out there all the time, even though, you know, you're done. I was given Teacher of the Year for my state. So it's just those kind of things where you think they're not possible, or maybe you don't even think that they'll happen to you. But if you just keep going and keep trying and do new things and bring other people in, to show them what you're doing or to help them understand what you're doing so that you can share your passion and not just accept those limitations on you. Because I could have just stayed where I was. I was happy, but I knew that I could do more and meet more people and want to help others become better in special education. And so I thought, why not? Let's change. Let's go do something else. And so I challenge other people to do that too.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I didn't know that you had been Teacher of the Year for your state. So congratulations. That is such an honor. And it just makes me think of if your kindergarten, first and second grade teachers and what they perceived about you when you were that age, if they know about that honor now and how that plays in their mind.
It's funny that you say that, because I actually, the district that I'm at right now, my kindergarten teacher's granddaughter is there, and I ran into her at the Christmas party. And so that was just crazy to see. I haven't seen my kindergarten teacher in, I don't even know how many years, but she immediately knew who I was. She immediately gave me a hug. She immediately was just like, I'm so proud of you. You know, all of these things. I'm not, you know, I know you're a fantastic teacher and all those, all the things that you would want to hear from somebody. And I will say she was a great kindergarten teacher. She was super, super sweet and did, you know, what kindergarten was 35 years ago. But yeah, that was kind of neat to see her again and hear those words. And I think that's anything anybody ever wants to hear is just, you know, nice and kind things, you know, and just encouragement from others and just that they're proud of you. Right. In any way, in any shape, in any form. I think sometimes we forget even just the small little things that you do deserve just a little bit of praise sometimes can go a long way. Definitely.
It really can. And we are so bad as a society and as individuals that we don't, even to our own loved ones, you know, tell them, hey, that was really good. Or, hey, I'm really proud of you. Or that really impressed me. But we are quick to, when they don't do something that we like or that's not, you know, the right thing to do, to jump on and let them know about that. And so that's an excellent point to remind everybody that we need to tell people when they're doing the right thing or the thing that we want them to be doing.
Right.
Because I think, and I kind of had a little of experience with this, and I'm guessing that you did as well, and possibly more so in the fact that, you know, you would put, from what it sounds like, lots of energy and time and effort into your schoolwork.
Yes.
And whether or not a teacher verbally said something to you, did you feel, though, that all your time and energy and effort was for naught because your test scores weren't perfect or your assignments weren't perfect or your, you know, whatever it was just didn't show up on paper?
Yeah, sometimes it was disheartening. And sometimes I can tell you in high school, it was kind of those things like, what's it going to matter? I'm going to study like crazy. I'm still not going to do well. I did have and still have really bad test anxiety. I can do really well. You know, I can study, I can do it all. But then when it comes down to doing it for that one little moment, it's just like it all goes away. And so those are really hard moments. But, you know, like, OK, if you study and you try your best, take a deep breath, use those methods that you kind of got into place, you know, take a break, you know, those kind of things, or write your notes down or your thoughts down on the side of the paper before you start. And you can go back and check through it, underline things as you're reading it. All of those things kind of play in your mind as you're going back through it. But it definitely is hard. It was hard. It's probably why I don't want to go in and further my education even more because it's the test. It's those tests. You know, I've thought several times about going and doing like maybe being nationally board certified teacher, but it's like you have to take a test at the end. And I'm like, I'm too old to be scared of a piece of paper and a pencil anymore. I know I can do it. But it's still, that fear is still definitely, is still there. It's funny how those little things do always just kind of stay with you.
Yeah. And something that you had mentioned earlier, and I wanted to talk about it, but you kind of brought it back just now, is the fact that if you have a specific learning disability or a traumatic brain injury or ADHD, you don't get cured from those things.
Right.
And it is a lot of coping strategies, a lot of supports that you put in place for yourself or that, you know, you have in place by others. And I often felt as a teacher that the gen ed teachers, that's what they wanted me to do, was they wanted me to cure. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I got that from parents and I still get that from parents sometimes, is they want me to cure
or
whatever it is that made the child eligible for special education.
Right.
And yes. I'm glad that you brought it up, that it is still part of your everyday life and that you are using those strategies and you are using mechanisms like the phone and all the spell check that is available. And, you know, again, that's kind of where the hashtag no limits comes from, is we don't know what technology advances there are going to be or what medical advances there are going to be or what might happen to us that maybe suddenly things that never clicked before all of a sudden are clicking. And we don't know why that happened, but it happened. Or the reverse, to be perfectly honest. I always focus on the on the going from, you know, I don't want to call it a negative, but having that limit to not having that limit of, you know, the world is wide open. But I was speaking with someone the other day, and it certainly can be in reverse, where you could be a typically developing person and you're an accident or a genetic disorder or whatever away from being a person who needs those supports and needs those accommodations and those strategies.
Definitely. You don't know. And that's why it's always, you know, important to just be kind. And you never know what somebody's dealing with or struggling with on the inside. Because if you look at me, I'm fine. I'm normal. I talk, speak well. You know, I seem like I'm educated and, you know, all of those things. When you first meet me and have a discussion, you would not know that I have struggled, you know, all of my life. And it's funny because I actually have a book club now. And if you would have asked me back in high school or even in college, if I would have a book club and be in charge and be over people and be excited about reading and be like, "You're crazy. I hate reading. I don't want to read. Reading for pleasure is not for me." Maybe a magazine on the beach somewhere. But not, you know, for fun at night or to try to wind down or anything. And so now the fact that I have a book club with one of another master IEP coach, one of our friends, Stephanie, we are doing it together. It's so funny how it's just full circle. It is. It's like something that you would think that you wouldn't want to do. And I hated for so long and would not do it. I actually enjoy doing it now, but I think it's just because you don't put those limits on yourself because reading is hard. It's still, you know, but I know how I can read and I can read well. And I'm not, I might not be the fluentest reader, but it's definitely now something that I do enjoy. And most of the books that I do read though are definitely somewhere in the special education realm or the professional development realm. So I can continue to help others.
Yeah. So let's talk about that because that's, who is that available for? How do people find out about it? What's the process of being involved with it?
Oh, sure. So our book club is called Overbooked. It is a book club for special educators or anybody that really sits at the IEP table, anybody that wants to learn more about the process. We were just talking one day and just decided, like, I think I even said, like, you just need to read a book. And I was like, we need to start a book club just for people who are in special education because we don't have anything like that. And people ask so many times, like, do you have any good books that you would suggest? And so that's what we do. We pick a book and then we study it together. Usually it's about 4 weeks long that we go with. And then we meet once a week and we talk about the book. The book that we just did over, we started in October and it ended right in December, was fantastic. It was a book, a partner, partnering with parents and for children who have special needs. And it was phenomenal. The author actually even got to come on and be a part of it at the end. And so we are always looking for special education books and things like that to continue to read together as a group. In February, we will start again. We have one, the book we're reading is called A Balanced Teacher's Life. And it just kind of helps teachers and educators. Right now, we felt like it was kind of helpful. Like, how do you balance school? How do you balance teaching and making sure that we're all healthy and doing it the right way. So that's the one we're reading in February, but we do, it's just the wait list. I have it on my Instagram handle, which is MeredithMitchellsMethods.com website. And then Facebook, Stephanie DeLucy has it on her, Mrs. D's Corner. We have them there, the links there. So there's a wait list right now just because it's just a wait list to get an email for when we start in February. So the next book will be in February and then we'll do one over the summer. We have one, but then we're going to continue. So it's like quarterly. We're trying to do 3 to 4 books during the year. And so we haven't picked out the one for the fall, but the one for the summer is coming. It's going to be an easy read. It's actually not going to be professional development, but it's going to be like a realistic fiction book called House Rules. It's called House Rules. It's a really good story. And it's about a son of a parent mother who has autism and he is somewhere being accused of murder. So that one's going to be really good fun book to read. So we'd love for y'all to join us if you want to. And I can definitely send you the link and everything. Shelly, if you want to put it out there for us.
Yeah. And I have shared it once before in my Facebook group. I don't remember if I've shared it on my Facebook business page and Instagram, but yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, just a shameless plug. And I know
we're ready
before.
I know we're ready. I'm ready to read it. I said it when we see you in July, bring your copies.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I actually get to do a book study with my local regional office of education. I don't know what it might be called in Alabama, if that's not what it's called, but basically it's like all the teachers in a certain area register their licenses with this regional office. And so that, you know, if they need subs or if they just, you know, for sending out professional development opportunities, then they know how to get them. And so I'm partnering with them in March, and I'll get to do a book study with the teachers here with the book. And I'm looking very forward to it because I really want to talk with people who are currently in the trenches to see, you know, how they react to the book and just, you know, different opinions about it. And I've had great feedback from a lot of people, a lot of teachers, a lot of master IEP coaches, and I very much appreciate that. And I'm hoping it's doing what I intended, which is changing the face of teaching a little bit and giving teachers a different, giving them the parent's perspective.
Right.
Heather, our other master IEP coach friend, and I'm not even going to, Heather C. I never say her name right, her last name. Full speed ahead. Exactly. she's absolutely just given me the best praise about the book because she's just fallen in love with it and how it's helped her have the parent's perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think we need that. I think we forget that, you know, like you talked about earlier, you just get into your routine of, you know, this is who I teach. This is what I teach. This is how I teach. And we don't think about that they're actual humans that we are interacting with every day. And those humans have humans, you know, how all of that plays into what they're like in our classrooms. So I very much appreciate Heather's words, and hopefully, you know, I'll get to do this with you guys too and be part of that. We will definitely make sure that we have links to your website, and it's called Meredith Mitchell's Methods. Is that just a catchy name, or do you have kind of a certain way that you do things that is different that you want to talk about?
It started as a catchy name because I love alliteration, but I do. But no, it is. It's just kind of the way I do things, the methods that I use to help in my classroom or to help other people when I mentor or coach other teachers. Just the little methods that I choose to do. You know, keep it positive, always be encouraging. You know, and you want your IEPs to be meaningful. You want them to be manageable, right? And those are those key phrases. And you want to be mindful of the people that are definitely at your table. And so those are the methods that I like to use while I'm writing IEPs and while I'm helping others figure out the best way for them to write and support their student and to make sure that it's the methods that they continue to use, just to kind of keep those in your forefront of your mind as you're doing them.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's so cool. All right. Well, I want to make sure that we've covered everything. And I'm honestly, I kind of feel like we might need to talk a little bit more about dyslexia in general.
Okay.
But I want to make sure that you've had a chance to share first anything that you had planned to share that I didn't maybe get to or that you didn't get to share.
No, I think that, yeah, that kind of covers everything that I'm kind of doing now and have done and the areas that I feel like, you know, I struggled with, but now have overcome it. So yeah, I think discussing, you know, what dyslexia actually is and how it affects so many people would be a great way to kind of close this out for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, tell us, I mean, you told us a little bit about your experiences, but if you can tell us, because it seems like it's the buzzword now.
Yes.
You know, and like for a while it was autism and then it was ADHD and now it's like everybody, you know, is talking dyslexia and dysgraphia. And so what if a parent were to come to you or if a parent or a teacher is watching this, what would kind of be the markers maybe for the key behaviors that might trigger a, hey, we need to look into this a little bit more?
Right. So let's talk about that. Dyslexia definitely affects millions of people. I don't think people realize that, but it's actually 14.5 to 43.5 million people. And that is children, teens, adults. I mean, that's a huge number. And so that was when I feel like the State Department and the, you know, just everyone was like, hey, we've got to start looking at dyslexia more than just a specific learning disability. And so that's kind of why I feel like those buzzwords are coming. It's coming in as one of the new areas and one of the categories. Maybe they might even change it. I don't know, to make it a 14th category. But it definitely will get you underneath specific learning disability. But the early signs that you can see for children in preschool, if you're in preschool, those signs are like if they're not learning their name, they're not able to recognize their name in print. That's definitely concerning. If they struggle to learn the letters of the alphabet or numbers, just being, you know, once they're presented, they might not be able to show them the letter, but they should be able to understand that, hey, that's a letter and that's a number and that's just a picture of a house, you know. So they should be able to kind of understand those areas. And also counting objects. People don't realize, but dyslexia definitely affects you in all areas. It's not just reading. Now, yes, you can have dyslexia and excel in math and do really well in math. Yes. But it is going to affect you somehow in those other areas because it just affects everything that you do. So children with dyslexia typically fail to master basic elements of reading despite just traditional teaching, right? So we all know that most kids are going to get it and get how to read. And I'm sorry, teachers, but they just are, right? They just are going to pick up on it. 50% of the population just is. However you teach it, they're going to learn it. Then you got about 15% that aren't, and they need a little bit more instruction. And then you go into the 5% that aren't getting it, and why aren't they getting it? And so, you know, of course, children who are reading below grade level is going to be a warning sign. If they're slow to learn like prefixes, suffixes, what root words are, that's a problem sign that you should see definitely. If you see they're spelling words differently, not just backwards. It's not taking the sentence and writing it all the way backwards. Now, yes, that's a sign, but I can't tell you how many parents are so concerned because little Johnny's writing his sevens backwards and his B's backwards, or he's confusing B's and D's and P's and Q's. Well, that is developmentally appropriate to do that. Now, past the age of 8, no, not so much. But that doesn't mean he's dyslexic. And so it's spelling words differently. So like where my dyslexia comes in, so I know how to spell and I can spell pretty well, but somewhere between my brain and my hand, I cross letters. So I don't write the words backwards. I write letters and I swap them. So let's say the word was read and I spell it R-A-E-D. Now, I know how to spell read. I know it's R-E-A-D, but somewhere between my brain and when I write it, they swap. And I do it constantly. I do it all the time. I even do it with phone numbers, any type of number in a sequence, an address. I will swap numbers around. So dialing a telephone number is even very difficult for me. I have to look at it several times to make sure I'm doing it correctly. And that's something that you learn as someone who has dyslexia. You've got to go back and check your work. And I say that constantly to the students that I work with. Your work, go back and look at it. Did you write it the right way? Did you spell it the right way? Did you, you know, and they're like, oh, and I'm like, I know, I don't want to go back and look at it either, but you have to. And so children who avoid wanting to write, definitely a warning sign. And then also students, and that's linked, dyslexia and ADHD are typically linked together. A lot of students who have dyslexia also have ADHD, and it doesn't necessarily mean they have the hyperactivity, but a lot of times it's the ones where they're distracted by things, right? I definitely have it. It's very hard for me to focus and pay attention on things in front of me, and that's just kind of goes with some of it. So those are some warning signs to look out for children. You know, and definitely adults, we have warning signs too. Some people don't even know they have dyslexia. They just think they've had problems all this life, and then as they get older, then they realize, oh, that has a name. That is exactly what I have. You know, if it takes you a long time to read a sentence, if you're slow to read, sometimes just, you know, spelling errors, when you procrastinate, put things off, that is definitely a sign of dyslexia. If you have trouble summarizing events during the day, that can go back to it. Have problems with remembering things, definitely. But people with dyslexia typically have really good social skills because we use it as a defense mechanism, or we use it to kind of cover up that we can't do other things. So we try to find other areas, other people, you know, to look at instead of that. I'm very good. I'm very verbal. I love to talk and speak and present because I feel like that's a strong suit for me. I'd much rather tell you about it than write about it. Just because I know that's a weaker area, and that's how I was growing up. Now, I definitely can, but growing up in school, definitely much rather tell you about it than having to write. So how do you help people with dyslexia? I guess is really the main thing too, that parents also want to know. So I am trained in the Orton-Gillingham method for dyslexia. There are other programs out there. Wonders is a good program. Letters is a good program. There's other methods out there, but I was trained in Orton-Gillingham. So I am certified to do that on the teacher and educator level. So that was very helpful for me. But it's taking that multi-sensory approach when you're teaching. So if you have a child that is struggling with dyslexia, I do strongly recommend to see if you can find a tutor that has had the training to help. If not, you do need to just talk with their teacher and say they need, you know, really systematic instruction. There needs to be a scope and sequence. There doesn't just need to be like, hey, let's pick this random word and learn how to spell it and pick this random, you know, let's start working on suffixes and then 2 weeks later, let's change and work, I don't know, let's do adjectives. There needs to be a scope and a sequence to it in a multi-sensory approach. And so what I mean by that is you need to take all your level, all your sensory levels, the auditory, the visual, the kinesthetic, all those different types of learning, and teach them that way. So kids are getting up, they're moving. When you're teaching the letters of the alphabet, you're not just pointing at the letter, but they're touching it, they're feeling it. That's that tactile to help them remember it in their brain. Large arm movements to mimic the letters also help. That because they're using all the pathways in their brain, they're hearing, they're feeling the motions, all bringing it together, and that helps them remember it and helps set it in to engage those to get a greater result when you need those for success in learning. So that's kind of what you do at the lower level, and then as you grow and do a lot of phonemic awareness using counters to sound out words, but they can see it. Using those visual cues definitely helps. Tapping the word, obviously, I mean, I use it, whether they tap it on their chin, the sounds, or they tap it on their arm, or they even tap it on the table. That definitely helps. But then memorization for children with dyslexia is key. It's hard for them to learn how to spell words. So if you can just give them the word, tell them how to spell it, show it to them, write it for them, and then have them sound it out next to it. Just that continual practice and putting those words in front of them definitely helps. It's funny, I definitely practice what I preach here at my home. I have word cards on everything in my house because I want my son and my daughter, who are both five and they're in kindergarten, but I need him to see the words. I need him to go ahead and get started because I see those signs that is concerning. You know, we want him to have the best chance and do get in. That early intervention is key, and kind of help them there with that. So I definitely suggest that for any parent who has a child who has dyslexia on the lower level. But if you already know they do and they're in middle school or in that intermediate school age, you know, definitely trying to get them a tutor, just that extra practice. Auditory is very important too. Luckily, we have lots of programs with books on tape. You can request your child to have his textbooks on tape, or not tape, but audio now. You know, they're downloadable.
You just hinted at how old you are.
You know, those kind of things now are readily available. And you know what? You don't have to have an IEP or a 504 plan to request that your child has his textbooks in an audio version. You don't. You can just request it, ask for it, follow up with them. And any student really can have that accommodation for them, because a lot of us just need it. That's just the way we learn, the best learning style.
Right. So why, and I don't know if you'll have an answer for this, but when parents, and I have found this as a master IEP coach working with parents, when parents go to schools and say, I think my child has dyslexia, schools are very reticent to, I mean, I know they don't have to, first of all, they can just say your child has a specific learning disability and they'll qualify for services under that. But do you have any thoughts on why schools don't want to specifically say, yes, your child has dyslexia, or even if you bring in a diagnosis from outside, that they'll acknowledge that it's a diagnosis of dyslexia?
So at least where I'm at, in the two different districts that I've worked in, three different districts, but where I'm at, we will take it from an outside source and we will say, okay, so you brought this in, you've been diagnosed with dyslexia. Of course, we have to see if that qualifies you for special education. Because even if you do have a diagnosis of dyslexia, you still have to meet the qualifications to show that it's affecting, you know, your academic performance, right? And so some kids, it doesn't. It doesn't, they're able to manage just with those coping strategies to do well without it. And that's wonderful. And that's definitely what I believe you would want. But then we do keep it under consideration. So let's say they do qualify for special education services. One, our tests aren't, at least the ones we use, aren't specifically designed to say this is dyslexia. All of the testing that we do on our level is just more to see, is it a reading weakness? Is it a math weakness? You know, is it a, you know, functioning skills, those kind of things, areas. And so they don't specifically look at that one area to see right now. I do know that it is in the works. We do have a dyslexia screener that we do with all of the children. And then that goes home to the parents to just alert them to say, hey, we think that these are some areas you might want to look at. I know the students that I work with, we will document it in their file if they do have a diagnosis of dyslexia from outside. But we tell the parents, even though it's not that specific area. And I think, too, because it does bleed into all the other areas sometimes, too, into math and social studies and science, behavior, it can bleed into all of those areas. So I feel like sometimes I just feel like it's more of a specific a learning disability, and then it just encompasses it. It's easier to say. And so that way you can get help in all the areas that you could possibly need. And you wouldn't want to just pinpoint someone down, you know, in that one area. Maybe, you know, but I feel like it is changing a lot. And I think one day we might just have that as its own category.
Yeah, I think that would be a good thing, because I think you do approach it differently. If you know that it is, if it is that specific, that you can give it a name.
Right.
I mean, we say it's a specific learning disability, but oftentimes we're hesitant to say, yeah, it's dysgraphia, it's dyscalculia, it's dyspraxia, it's dyslexia, it's whatever the dys that comes, you know, mm-hmm. before. I've just gotten so much pushback when, you know, we've gone in. And so what I've started doing with my families is, you know, saying, instead of coming in and saying, hey, I think my child has dyslexia, let's go in and say, you know, these are the deficits that I believe my child has. Mm-hmm. What can we do to address those deficits? And you just list out the deficits that they have that would lead to a dyslexia diagnosis, sure. But you don't say dyslexia. Mm-hmm. And then that seems to help a little bit more.
I think you're right, Shelley. And I think it's interesting, just as a special education teacher, this is what I do. But it is, it's funny when somebody walks in, they say, hey, my child has dyslexia. Sometimes you're like, really? Do they? But if they come in and they say, hey, my child is struggling and this, then you're like, oh, they might have dyslexia. I don't know. Sometimes the parent takes the label off already. So we're like, you know, just come in and be concerned and give us what you think's going on. Tell us what's going on. Then as a team, you know, they can come together and say, I think you're right. Sometimes it's helpful not to just come in and say, you know, it's with anything. Hey, I think my child has ADHD. And you're like, okay, well, come in and say my child has a lot of behavior issues. They don't sit still. They can't pay attention to tasks. They're, you know, and just list off the characteristics. Sometimes that does work better.
Yeah. And I like how you put that, because I do think it's a, are you just saying this because you want a label for your child? Mm-hmm. Or do you really know that, hey, my child is having, you know, where's that data? That's actually what we're saying is present the data to mm-hmm. the team of here's a deficit, here's what's happening, here's a behavior, whatever it is. And then let the team, you know, you would think it would be easier to just come in and say, here, I already know that my child has this. Yeah. but it doesn't always manifest, you know, the mm-hmm. same. And so there is all of that kind of stuff going. So that's
if you go to the doctor, when you walk in and they say, you know, what's wrong with you? And you're like, okay, well, I think I have strep throat. I know it. I've got strep throat. And they're like, well, you don't. I just cleared, you know, swabbed you and you're negative. You know, it's something like that. But if you go in and you tell them all of your symptoms, then he's able to listen to you. He's able to talk to you about all the different things. And I think that's kind of maybe the same approach we should take as a parent. Just come in, give them all the characteristics and the symptoms, and then go from there. I think you get a lot further.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's true. Well, Meredith, it has been an absolute pleasure to get to know you better, because when we were all together, we didn't have a chance to sit down and chat and learn all these things about each other. And so I'm very happy to get to know you better. And is there anything else? Let us know. Tell us again how people can reach you, how they can find you, follow you, and get involved in your book club.
Sure. So, yeah, it was so fun to be here during the Christmas break. Like you said, I have no idea what day it is or time. So it's so nice to just have this opportunity to be on here with you. And I love your hashtag No Limits. It's so great. I know it's helping so many people. But yeah, so yeah, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. It's Meredith Mitchell's Methods, both on Instagram and Facebook. And we do have our website is just MeredithMitchellsMethods.com. And so you can find me there. There's a link for the book club that's on my website. One of the little tabs at the top. I have a blog that's on there. Different ways and different methods that I use to work with people. If anybody has any questions, I do live in Alabama, so I typically like to try to work in the South when I travel and I do professional developments and go into school systems. I've talked to doctors' offices. Done a lot of professional development there with some psychiatrists and things like that to help them understand what special education is and what IEPs are. And so that's just kind of where I am and what I'm doing. I would love for all of you to come on and follow me as well. It would be great. I'm just honored that I was able to come on here and kind of share my knowledge of dyslexia with you guys.
Great. Thank you so much, everybody. I'll see you next week. Have a happy new year.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.